Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello!
This is the Delicious Legacy Podcast. Welcome to another archaeogastronomical adventure. I'm your host, Thomas Dinas. On this episode, we are exploring an ingredient, a plant, or family, actually, of plants that became so essential to human survival. And they exist everywhere on the planet in different forms. As you might imagine, I often think about food. And of course, thinking about food several times a day, and in my thoughts, many times there are beans. So I end up thinking about beans quite often. This is my Roman Empire. And that happens not only when I'm hungry, of course, but also when I think about, you know, about our world problems, yeah? The environmental ones, the hunger crisis that ravage the globe, health issues, of course, people eating too much meat, obesity, this and that, and crisis after crisis after crisis, everything that we face in our planet today. Naturally, the answer to all this seems to be beans, or legumes in general. They're a cheap source of food and protein, especially in the current cost of living crisis. They help the soil and the nutrients and the synthesized nitrogen, which is very expensive nowadays, especially with the wars happening in Ukraine and poor soils that are depleted of nutrients. So yeah, there is so much potential out there for beans. And while I'm thinking about food and the podcast and all that, this led me to wonder of their history, the past, the bean influence in recipes and cookbooks of our previous generations and so on, and their role naturally in the lives of ancient Greeks and Romans alike. And I would like to help with their perception in the eyes of our modern population and make them cooler in a way and find some interesting aspects and perhaps impact some inspiration on how to cook and serve them and add them to our diet, but with the influences from the deep past. So enjoy today's episode on the history of beans. I would also like to add that a lot more current information about beans you can find in BBC's The Food Programme. They released two episodes of beans, Beans Part 1 and 2, on March 27th, 2022. So if you go and search for that episode, there's two half-an-hour episodes, they're really good. Plus, Gastropod, the podcast about food and history and science, released an episode October 2023, called Beans, Beans, the Magical Fruit. So that had a lot of interesting current information. Plus, there was an episode with Sejal Sukhtawala on beans from the podcast called Smart Mouth, which was released in September 2023. So clearly, I'm not the only one who thinks about beans, and there's a lot of potential about this magical, in a sense, vegetable to solve a lot of our problems. So there are a lot of podcasts out there talking about beans. I'm not the only one, thankfully. So I suppose we can define the bean as loosely applied to any legume or seed or pod that's eaten and not classed as a pea or as a lentil. Beans traditionally were the genus Phaseolus, but some of their species, including the black-eyed pea, are of the genus Vigna, and peas are in the genus Pisum. So all these different vegetables together, they are the legumes, but interchangeably and confusingly, we do tend to use the term bean to describe all of this. And yeah, they have a fascinating history, which I'm going to explore today. I hope you enjoy. As our societies become more affluent and rich and sort of progress to a more sci-fi food future, our diets change, right? For the worse, if you ask me. So people forfeit the legumes and the vegetables of their peasant past, disparaging them as simple as mere foods of sustenance. And instead they embrace the processed, ultra-processed foods, ready-made meals, and all the sugary treats. Yes, we're talking about beans today, a fascinating plant. And by beans, we just don't mean bean as the ones you get on your Heinz beans for breakfast. We're talking about the whole family, legumes or pulses, or otherwise known as beans as well. And that includes chickpeas, lentils, the runner beans from North America and Mesoamerica. And these come as whole beans, they come as split beans, dals, we have bean curries, we have bean stews, lentils, chickpeas, split pulses, all sorts of different names for them. And their popularity is attested on the fact that we have many, many traditional, delicious and nutritious meals and dishes with beans from all over the world. Like we have the fabada in Asturias, in northern Spain. We have full medames in Egypt. We have the famous Boston baked beans, the gigantes, giant butter beans from Prespes in Greece, baked in tomato sauce and onion. We have mashy peas, we have peas pudding, we have the cassoulet in France. So there's a whole lot of fully hearty, nutritious, delicious meals that beans create. So yeah, today I want to talk a little bit about them and praise them a little bit and find their history through the ancient world, in ancient Greece and in ancient Rome, and the history of pulses from America and so on. A lot of the white beans that we use today, like the gigantes, the giant butter beans in Greece, they are from America. Or the runner beans, they are from America as well. From then we used there as food as part of the Three Sisters method of growing vegetables, where you had your tomato plants, you had your peppers, you had your squashes, your corn, and by corn I mean maize, and you had also the runner beans growing and climbing on the stalks of the corn. And also they were replenishing the soil with nutrients, with nitrogen. The beans in baked beans are a variety called navy beans, which is part of the common beans, Phaseolus vulgaris. The same and vital species that gives us our kidney beans and our cannellini beans and French and black and pinto and haricot and flageolet and borlotti and marro. All these beans, they are from the New World. They are native to Mesoamerica and North America, and along with squash, as I said, and maize, they formed the Three Sisters system, which was the basic agricultural production, food production of Native American cultures. Of course, beans contain up to three times the protein of rice or wheat, and making this staple of rice and beans a stalwart dish for most American and Caribbeans. And in a sense, almost a complete meal. And it is known that a number of indigenous American tribes, they seem to have been baked their beans with bear fat and venison and maple syrup. And they were covering these earthenware pots with hot stones and they were cooking that in the ashes. So the ancient Greeks and Romans, they ate a lot of lentils as soups and stews, which was a cheap and filling meal, alongside with chickpeas, of course, and black-eyed peas, which was another legume used in the ancient world. This black-eyed pea has been cultivated in China and India as well, and originates in Africa, so its reach is global, really. Beans in ancient Greece were eaten raw, or boiled, or roasted. You had lupins and fava, which is part of the yellow split pea family, which we're going to talk about later. And these beans, all these different legumes in ancient Greece, were often eaten among tragemata, which is kind of served at the end of the meal and with drinks and so on. Cicero, for example, in ancient Rome, the politician and historian and philosopher, became rich because his family had farms with chickpeas, and hence the name Cicero. Like, he was the man for the chickpeas. And of course, we have the stories from ancient Greece about Pythagoras and his irrational fear of beans, which are quite amusing. And I talked about in detail on the episode about vegetarianism and Pythagoras, all the way back in season one. In Europe and Africa and Asia, as we said, there were the chickpeas and the lentils that the ancients ate in abundance, and also the black-eyed pea, which apparently the ancient Greeks and Romans preferred to chickpeas. The black-eyed peas, the Vigna unguiculata, are a variety of the cowpea, and they're part of the family of beans and peas, as we said, and they, although they're called a pea, they're actually a bean. So black-eyed peas, actually beans. So both peas and beans are legumes, as we said, and on both of them you can eat the seeds and the pods, right? So the Romans gave the name of legumen to all edible seeds, which form in pods and can be eaten as a porridge or made into a puree. The noun derives from the verb lego, to collect or gather, and also to choose or select, to take. Pols is from the Latin pulse, a porridge made of meal or similar substance. As for legumes, they are seeds which abound in more varieties than any other vegetables. So you have broad beans, peas, beans, and so on. Initially in Rome, in ancient Roman times, pouls was a thick porridge made of emmer, a very traditional Roman food, and it was basic as the bread. And the making of it began with hulled emmer, and it was completed in many ways, sometimes incorporated meat, as we've seen examples in recipes of Apicius, or cheese. There's the pouls punica, based on Cato and Pliny, a version of a porridge. And then there's something different again, pouls fabacia, a heavy mixture incorporating broad beans, which was offered along with bacon to the goddess Karna every year on the calends of June. The wild pea is restricted to the Mediterranean basin and the Near East, and the earliest archaeological finds of peas date from the late Neolithic era in the current area of Syria, Anatolia, Israel, Iraq, Jordan and Greece. In Egypt, early finds date from around 4800 BCE in the Nile Delta and from around 3800 BCE in Upper Egypt. The pea is also present in Georgia in the 5th millennium BCE. Farther east, the finds are younger. Peas were present in Afghanistan around 2000 BCE, in modern-day Pakistan, in the Harappan civilization, and western and northwestern India from around 2250 BCE. And in the second half of the 2nd millennium BCE, this legume crop appears in the Ganges Basin and southern India. And peas were grown mostly for the dry seeds, in early times at least. Something to keep and cook later on. As early as we said, from Neolithic times, when plants were growing wild in the Mediterranean basin, constant selection improved their yield, right? And in the early 3rd century BCE, so the time of the Hellenistic world, Theophrastus, the naturalist, mentions peas among the legumes that are sown late in the winter because of their tenderness. In the 1st century AD, Roman Empire and so on, Columella mentions them in De Rustica, and when Roman legionaries still gathered wild peas from the sandy soils of Numidia and Judea to supplement the rations. In ancient Roman times, we know that beans fetched a better price if they were skinned and split, because the bean it has edible skin, but it's a bit tough, let's say. So they fetched a better price when were split, and they were ready to be boiled for a bean soup or etnos. So bean meal, also in Greek alevron eregminon, was mixed with flour to increase the weight of soap-salt bread. Etnos is the name of a pulse soup, and specifically made from beans, unless it's been clarified and specified differently. Oribasius discusses it and its medicinal uses in some detail. Oribasius was a Greek medicinal writer who was born on the 4th century AD and died around 400 AD. So all these pulses, peas and chickpeas, and above all broad beans, were simmered to the point where they became very mushy. That was the traditional way of eating them all over the Mediterranean. References to faba and boiled kokia, which is the chickpeas and the broad beans, with or without oil, they became increasingly frequent in the rules of monasteries, now moving towards the Christian era, and in the saints' lives. Because they were a staple food for the monks who were fasting and living in monasteries and living a more simple life. And that was basically very important for the diet, because there was not much meat, there was a lot of fasting and so on. So they generally served them with green and black olives and pickled cabbage. So kind of the triptych, the holy trinity of a monastic diet was the olives, the pickles, pickled cabbage mainly, and the beans, or any kind of pulses basically, lentils, chickpeas, peas, broad beans. So many ascetics lived on soaked, dried broad beans alone, apparently. And fava, which is the simplest preparation in Greek gastronomy, is something with a constant presence since ancient Neolithic times, really. We find evidence of that. So fava in Greece, whether made with broad beans or chickpeas or peas, a variety called Lathyrus clemenu from Santorini, is a tradition dating back to prehistoric times, right, and continues to this day by making the pottage or pureed legumes. And the first evidence of faba being found in excavations in Knossos in Crete and in Thera in Santorini. So we've seen the monk, our pious Christian, getting his bean soup made by an angel and tasting great. In medieval monasteries around Europe, aside from bread, the single most commonly eaten food was probably the bean. Broad beans have been cultivated for millennia in the Middle East. They are still a staple source of protein in Egypt, for example, as full mentames. And this is the place where monastic Christianity grew and spread across Europe and the Middle East. So in some medieval cultures, a link between the broad bean and the afterlife persisted, and perhaps is a remnant of the ancient Pythagorean ideas that the soul migrated after death into beans. A 16th century Italian church council prohibited the relatives of the deceased from handing out beans to bystanders in church at funerals. Also in monastic sources, there's a mention of lentils, chickpeas and red beans, all of which were treated in the same way, either boiled and dressed with oil, as we've seen again from Byzantium, or stewed with fresh vegetables such as onions and herbs. The type of pulse would depend on the region that the monastery was, but beans, lentils and peas were grown, as we've said, all over Europe. After 1000 AD, productive cultivation of beans increased significantly as a result of new agricultural developments. In particular, the invention of the deep share plow enabled a great depth of soil to be dug, which in turn allowed for greater productivity. In Byzantium, pulses reached a high level of sophistication. This staple food were carefully spiced and had an astonishing array of flavors. Some of the most popular beans and legumes consumed was the Lathyrus ochrus, afkos, the chickpea called erebinthos, the grass pea, Lathyris, the faba, broad bean, the fasulia, the black-eyed peas, and telis, the fenugreek seed, which is not very well known or consumed nowadays, to be honest, probably as a fodder for animals. So Simeon Seth, which was a Byzantine scientist, translator, and an official under the Emperor Michael VII Lucas around the 11th century AD, he was writing about this stuff. And he recommends a soup of black chickpeas, turnips, celery, seasoned with almond oil, for anyone afflicted with renal and urinary problems. In other texts, we read about the grass pea and the Lathyrus ocrus, another one of the beans, and we read that they can be seasoned with olive oil and ground cumin. Broad beans might be boiled, then tossed in salt, and then the best green olive oil. I would guess something like an extra virgin or early harvest olive oil. Also, we find out about black-eyed peas. They were boiled with pepper or mustard or oregano or caraway and served with olive oil and vinegar or with honey vinegar. Fenugreek seed was recommended by Byzantine dietitians in at least three forms: as a soup, as a dried bean, steeped, sweetened and sprouted, eaten as a starter with a variety of dressings, or well boiled, cold, flavoured with honey, spikenard and cinnamon. And apparently, in this form, the last one, fenugreek was ideal as a component of the March menu. Remember, they had very interesting ideas about diet and about the humoral theory, how that complements the diet and what foods can be eaten depending on your humoral makeup. In October, among pulses, avoid broad bean, lentil and grass pea. Eat the others, it was one of the advice. It's not surprising that the broad beans that are recommended for March are dried and therefore have to be soaked and boiled well before being tossed in salt and the best green olive oil. That's something that obviously all beans that we use now, all the dry beans, have to be soaked in water for 8 hours at least or overnight to become easy to boil. Epiphanius used to spend the first week of Holy Lent without food and drink. One Lent, before the celebration of the Divine Liturgy, having spent the week fasting, he was in his room cooking beans on the brazier, which had been fed with charcoal for the sake of heating, because of the chilly weather, not letting any of his servants touch them. As he was sitting there, leaning towards the heat and cooking the beans, the sounding board was struck for the prayer. He stood up and went to church without ordering anybody to look after the cooking. But the accursed demon fell on the young man with thoughts of defection, using the care of the cooking as pretext to drive him out of the church before the dismissal. "Go out and make sure that your beans are not being burned, producing a foul smell." He crossed himself and remained standing until the dismissal. When he returned home, he found everybody astonished at the most sweet smell spreading there. Coming nearer, Epiphanius too felt the incredible sweet smell and was astounded at the marvel. When he entered his room, where the brazier stood, filled with charcoal, and lifted up his eyes, he saw a beautiful young man of wonderful stature dressed in a divine robe, his face shining brighter than the sun. And this young man had his right arm uncovered and stood busying himself at the brazier, having blonde hair on his head, like gold in appearance. While Epiphanius stood speechless, amazed at the sight of him, the pleasant cook tasted the soup, as if to check whether it was ready. Then, withdrawing a small bag from the fold of his garment, he took seasoning with three fingers and put it crosswise into the pot. Whereupon he covered his bare arm again with the sleeve of his cloak. While he gazed at Epiphanius with a smile on his face, he suddenly spread wings, lifted himself from the ground, and disappeared towards heaven. Having given thanks to God, Epiphanius went to see what the man had made of the soup. He found that it surely emitted the sweet smell, a smell of a kind that one cannot reckon among the fragrances of earth. Marveling greatly at the wonder, he thanked the Lord. And with this prayer, he began to eat the bean soup. and was filled with an immense sweetness. All his senses were at once transformed into a state of divine inspiration. And this is the bean soup of the angels that I mentioned earlier, the text, where, you know, has one of the very few descriptions of cooking process in Byzantium. This description contains information about cooking pots, the charcoal fires that heat the cold house in the winter, and the hand of an angel above the cauldron which seasoned and stirred and gave divine flavor to the vegetarian dish of a noble Christian. I'll be back after this short break.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The dish of pulses with chopped walnuts or nutmeg mentioned in the monastic Typica, the writings from the rules from monasteries, may be the one described in this Middle Byzantine text of the 8th to 10th century. But in this case, it is more probable that it was grated nutmeg and not chopped walnuts that they were added to the dish, prepared with or without olive oil. The mention orofasulon in this, which means mountain or wild bean, it is more likely to be the well-known ambelofasulo or mavromatico, which is the black-eyed pea. And now let's see some humoral properties of the beans, as we talked about humoral theory in the humors and the diet in medieval Europe and Byzantine world. So the broad beans have a high proportion of coldness, apparently, and cause gas and wind in the bowels and heaviness in the head. Boiled with vinegar, they inhibit movement of the bowels. Eaten green, they add moistness to the constitution. Chickpeas have a high proportion of heat, and they too cause gas in the bowels. They bring on menstruation, increase the urine, and encourage sexual intercourse. water from boiling chickpeas is good for those with kidney stones. If the chickpeas are roasted, and it's the same with beans, they stop bowel movements and are more nutritious. When eaten fresh, they add moisture to the constitution. Lupins are indigestible and produce thick humors. Fenugreek seed, steeped in water, sweetened and sprouted, moves the bowels. This is the case whether the seed is eaten with fish sauce or vinegar and fish sauce, or wine and fish sauce and olive oil. Eaten with fish sauce alone, it causes headache, but with wine and fish sauce and olive oil, it does not. It depends on the amount of wine, I say, but never mind. The water from cooking fenugreek, boiled and taken with honey, dislodges unhealthy humors in the stomach. It is good for the bowels. Lentils are cold and dry. They dry and cool the constitution and produce excess black bile. They also cause weak vision. Lupins are hot and dry. They are indigestible and bring on menstruation. But if sweetened in hot water, they are lighter food and not so indigestible. The husk is astringent. Black eye peas are hot and moist in temperament. They produce wind in the bowels, move the bowels, bring on menstruation, increase the urine, cause nocturnal emission. Some people steep black-eyed peas or Lathyrus okra seeds till they sprout and eat them as a starter, dipped in fish sauce. This is to move the bowels. The water from boiling black-eyed peas is nourishing when well boiled. And this is some of the food and diet instruction given about beans and pulses in general and how they fit into the diet of a Christian along with the seasons and the humoral theories and the humoral constitution and how they can slot in into the seasons. It's kind of astonishing, isn't it, that with so much baked beans, especially in cans from a specific brand, and yet there's so many different varieties, thousands upon thousands of beans, and yet, we don't grow much in UK, really. It's kind of puzzling, to be honest. And I find these tiny baked beans in cans really boring, with no flavour, just sweetness and sugar. Subsequently, I found out in Norwich, local farmers are growing huge amounts of fava beans, but all these are being exported in the Middle East, or they've been sold as animal feed. But this fava bean, so-called broad bean, is one of the oldest cultivated crops in the UK, and we were all eating it as far as back in as the Iron Age. It's been a crucial part of the British diet for centuries. In more recent times, it became stigmatized as a food of the poor and fell out of fashion. These beans remained an important part of the British diet, particularly the peasant diet, throughout the medieval period, as this protein-rich food could be stored and eaten all year round. And like dried peas, beans were commonly eaten as porridge or made into bread. Not so long ago, a few years back, I've learned of a traditional northern dish from my wife, which I've never heard before, from Lancashire. And this is called parched peas or black peas. It seemed that it was a dish that she used to eat on a bonfire night as a snack in the cold, rainy, generally chilly evenings of a bonfire on the 5th of November. They seem to have this little snack in conical paper cups with hot peas, either mushy or whole and crunchy, with lashings of vinegar and salt, which I found very interesting. So this is from the Pisum sativum genus, and they're cooked peas, basically, and parched. It's an old term, basically, for long, slow boiling. And they're served traditionally in Lancashire and with lots of malt vinegar. The taste is very earthy, and they're seasoned with vinegar and salt. So this is popular in Bury, in Preston, Rochdale, Oldham, Wigan, Bolton, Atherton, Haywood, Lee, and so on. The peas are usually field peas, left dry on the plant, and distinct from garden peas, which are green. And it seems like it was generally sold in the markets of industrial towns. Oral traditions state that this has been the case for as long as anybody remembers. And that this is very well known locally, but otherwise unknown outside the area, especially in southern Britain. And depending where you're from, in Lancashire, of course, they are certainly soaked for 24 hours and then they're cooked and different people prefer it differently, too mushy or whole or anything in between, really. And in some places they're eaten cold as a snack or in other places warm. Another legume dish that is associated with the northeast England is peas pudding, and basically also is associated with Lent and fasting in general. And probably, most likely, peas pudding developed from the old potages of dried peas, which were a national dish in England during the 16th and 17th centuries, known in French recipe books as potage in the English style. The popularity declined during the 18th century, and the pudding itself gradually became regionalized to the northeast. Because it was an accompaniment for salted pork, generally, as in peas pudding and boiled bacon, there are medieval instructions for the identical combination. So these yellow split peas are soaked and cooked in water until they disintegrate into a puree, just like us with fava, really, and then they're seasoned to taste, usually just with salt, and then poured into a bowl and left to cool. Alternatively, salt stock from cooking bacon can be used to cook the peas, and then it can be seasoned and enriched with butter and egg as desired, and then reheated. And I think that's going to be much more tastier and appealing side dish, right? So yeah, this is two of the recipes from England I found about pulses that they seem to be traditional and historically accurate, going on for centuries. The most famous giant beans, giant butter beans in Greece, they are from Prespas. These frontier lakes of big and small Prespa, they're up in the north-northwest of Greece, near the borders with Albania and North Macedonia. They are part of a mystical and magical landscape of Greece and the general area. A Greece that you cannot really imagine. It's not the image that conjures up into our brains when we think of Greece. Archaeological data show that the people have lived in Prespa Valley for over 4,000 years. Documented human presence does not emerge until the 2nd century BCE. Inscriptions found on the island of Agios Achilios, in one of the lakes, dates to the Hellenistic era and refers to Julius Crispus and the independent city of Lycia. In classical times, the Prespa region formed part of the ancient Lyncus, and the lakes were called Little and Great Briges, so the best Greek beans come from this area, from the wetlands of Prespas. They are awarded a PGI, so a Protected Geographical Indication status, and I guess their unique flavor originates from the nutrient-rich soil and the unique microclimate of the area. And in my hometown of Veria, which is North Greece, again, in many ways it's not far away from Prespas, but yeah, given the landscape, the mountainous landscape, and the way the geography works in North Greece, it's not, you don't consider it close either. It's not a close-up area. But yeah, in my hometown, we eat a lot of beans, a lot of giant beans, and we are famous for the oven-baked giant beans, slow-cooked, usually in the baker's oven after they finished with the bread. It's a small town, agricultural, growing up with our grandmas, who were very religious, but also very traditional. The food to have on a Wednesday or a Friday was giant baked beans in the oven. Vegetarian, plus it was a Lent food. And it was also delicious. The grandmas knew how to cook it properly. And this fasulo davas, as we call it in Veria, aka bean tavas or bean stew, bean oven stew, is a thing that all variants, or at least the old ladies, used to do and did it very well. Very popular in the whole of Macedonia, North Greece, but also very, very well known in Veria specifically. Perfect for a cold winter's day with some nice village bread. The dish relies, of course, in soaking the beans overnight. So grandma, our yaya, would put in a saucepan the beans, cold water, soak them for 12 hours, and then the next morning she will start the process by draining that water, rinsing them, putting them in clean water, and boiling the beans for an hour and a half, adding onion, grated onion, lots of olive oil, maybe a cup of extra virgin olive oil, fresh grated tomato or tomato juice or tomato puree, and in the oven, bake it for half an hour or so until it has a nice crust on top. So beans and pulses in general, they are part not only of my upbringing, but of my everyday life now as well. The giant butter beans we eat in Greece, and generally all the butter beans, they're from an American variety called lima bean, which is found in Meso and South America. And it seems it has taken domestication in Andes around 2000 BCE and around Mesoamerica around 800 AD. And from these varieties, these varieties came to Europe, obviously, after the Colombian exchange. And they are these really tasty, nutritious beans that have high fiber content that prevents blood sugar levels from rising too rapidly after eating them. Yeah, they're really, really good, providing with steady, slow-burning energy to the human body. I love talking about all these unique products from small areas with very special microclimate and so on. So I'm going to tell you about the lentils of Engkluvi, which is an area in Lefkada, in the island of Lefkada, in the Ionian Greek islands. So this village of Engkluvi is at 730 meters altitude and is the highest village of Lefkada and one of the oldest in the island. It's located very centrally, and it means, as the name suggests, surrounded or trapped in the mountains. In the altitude, in a plateau of 900 meters, the hard-working inhabitants, from generation to generation, grow crops of lentils. These lentils of Engkluvi, they are known for its unique taste and nutritional value. Every year on the 6th of August, the village and the lentil farmers celebrate the local product, the valuable lentils treasure that is cooked and served to the visitors of the plateau. So this plateau is also listed in the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations as one of the 5 protected areas for unique aesthetic, natural and cultural beauty in Greece. As it is, these lentils are a worldwide unique product, and for its uniqueness has excelled in many exhibitions. And these are included in the National Index of Intangible Cultural Heritage of Greece under the UNESCO banner. The cultivation of this variety on that place, it seems to go back in time immemorial. They grow in the same way from generation to generation and without using any kind of chemical fertilizers and pesticides. The work is tedious and the yield of the crop depends entirely on the weather, and therefore the value, proportional to its cost, is increased depending on that. It's 100% natural, organic and superior product from the area. And these lentils are cooked according to the traditional recipe and stands out for its unique flavor and texture. It's easily boiled, completely free of any chemicals, and of obviously ideal for all ages. And I'll put some links on the episode transcript for you to find out more. Now, fava, one of the most famous Greek pulses products, especially the one from Santorini, it's something we commonly translate in English as yellow split pea, and it's a yellow split pea puree that we call fava. But this is this comes from 2 different plants. One is called Lathyrus sativus, and another one, which is a species of pea, Pisum sativum. And it's a plant which is very difficult to grow. I mean, not difficult per se, but it has unique ways and very manual work to be done. And it needs certain weather to grow properly. For example, if there are wet southern winds, then the production is very, very small. Generally, the most delicious fava producers are from places that they have volcanic soil. And again, fava is another excellent source of protein, which is something that obviously it made it even more interesting to Europeans, Northern Europeans, especially the last few years, because there is more interest in consuming less meat as a society, especially red meat and especially meat from industrial farming, which is harmful to the planet in many ways and to our health as well. And as we said, all the pulses, all the beans and bean and peas are an excellent source of protein. So places like, as we said, Santorini is the most famous one. But there's also fava from Skyros, from the island of Skyros, from Lemnos, and from Zakynthos, or Zante, which is in the Ionian side. And in a place in Peloponnese, again in a plateau, in an old dry lake called Pheneos. So in Pheneos, fava is also very famous. So specifically the Santorini fava is very famous, the most famous Greek one. And it has a history of over 3,000 years from analysis of DNA of seeds that they were found in the excavation of Akrotiri, the ancient Santorinian city buried under the volcanic eruption of Thera. So this fava is from Lathyrus, the Lathyrus climenum, which is has unique characteristics due to the volcanic soil of the island and also the cycladic climate. It has a unique sweetness in the aftertaste. And when you cook it, you don't need to stir it at all. You just cook it slowly, shortly, and it has a delicious flavor when it becomes that puree, that nice mush. Up to this day, especially in these small islands, the cultivation and the gathering of the fava happens with hands. There's no machinery. And that's because the islands, the plots, the land is small anyway. You cannot have machinery. And the whole cultivation is among rocks and rocky soils and slopes and so on. So there's no way to put a tractor there. The collection of the seed happens early in the morning when the morning dew softens the plant, and everything happens by hand, like the collection, the breaking of the seed for the split pea. So everything is manual. Talking about different beans and pulses, we saw chickpeas, we saw lentils, we saw the beans from Americas, and peas and black-eyed beans. There's another one called lupin, which is not very well known in modern Western, Northern European tradition. That's another legume which is traditionally eaten as a snack food and pickled food generally around the Mediterranean. The most ancient evidence of that is back on the 12th dynasty of the Egyptian pharaohs, and they found it in tombs, basically. And lupin is commonly used in Egypt today and is eaten by the Egyptians as a snack. Lupini were used by the Romans, according to Wikipedia, who spread their cultivation throughout the Roman Empire. And they're also eaten in Greece as well. I've heard of them and I've seen them in a few places. And I don't know if that's also influenced from the Middle East and the Ottoman Empire, or it's been independently part of Greek tradition since the Roman times or so. Of course, as it's common with many foods that our ancestors ate, grew basically to become edible. Basically, there is a bitter variety that are high in alkaloids, so extremely bitter unless they're rinsed methodically. So cultivars happened over years, and mutations called sweet lupins are in existence and grew by our ancestors over many, many generations. And commonly there is also an Andean American variety, which was domesticated by pre-Incan inhabitants of the present-day Peru, which is, again, interesting. We see beans and the different types of beans have been, they have a worldwide spread. Now, who doesn't know cassoulet, the famous French dish? This is so important to French people that there is even an academy of cassoulet. And this comes in three variations. The cassoulet of Castelnau d'Arry, which is the father, the cassoulet of Carcassonne, the son, and the Toulouse cassoulet, the Holy Spirit. Of course, one of the essential points is the long cooking in a low oven, breaking the crust several times. Some people even say that you have to break it seven times to have an excellent cassoulet. And generally you have beans, confit, pork loin, onions, bouquet garni, seasonings. That's the main ingredients for every cassoulet. There are variations, of course. So in the Toulouse cassoulet you have lamb and mutton, then at the end of the cooking you put sausage and duck confit. And the cassoulet creation myth goes back all the way to the Hundred Year War. It's the year 1355, and the inhabitants of Castle Nodderry are under siege from the English. Edward, the Black Prince, simply ransacked town after town on his way from Bordeaux to the Mediterranean coast, probably taking most of the food with him. So the people of Castle Nodderry pulled the remaining food, the little morsels of stuff each one had, a bit of duck, someone, a bit of geese, some sausages maybe, some pork trotters, in order to cook up a dish, a hearty dish, that their men would be powered from, and they would be able to push back these northern hordes back to the channel. Lovely as a myth, certainly a fiction, because no such siege ever occurred. More importantly, Gauls were always famous for eating pork, and of course Jews with lentils and peas and beans, centuries before England came into existence. There is an element of truth, perhaps, if we suggest a link to the extremely sophisticated 13th century recipe collections from the Arab world, attributed to Muhammad of Baghdad, whose spiced mutton stews and legumes may have influenced medieval French cooks. And this is because, obviously, there was the Kingdom of Andalusia and all the Moorish, Spanish Arabs into direct contact with the French and with the trade and all the stuff that we explored in previous episodes. However, the main element of cassoulet, which are the little white beans, they must have appeared after the 16th century because, obviously, beans, these white beans arrived after the Columbus exchange, after Columbus went to the New World. And the sanctity of cassoulet is taken so seriously in France, there is even a brotherhood, the Grand Confrère du Cassoulet, that defends the glory and quality of cassoulet in Castle Nodderry, and in part by conducting surprise taste tests of cassoulets offered by local chefs. And there is also an Académie Universelle du Cassoulet, whose members promote the cassoulet and its significant cultural heritage. Amazing, isn't it? I'll put a link on the episode notes about the Académie du Cassoulet, so you can find out more about it. I love stories with beans, you know. Now, we all heard when something is described as a fiasco, something that it was a complete failure. And that's a very interesting thing. I'm not sure how that's related to the most perfect dish of Tuscan feast, which is fagioli al fiasco, which is basically beans cooked in a flask. Basically, fiasco is a Tuscan word for flask. And basically, this dish, which is generally considered a side dish of the Tuscan cuisine, and also the Tuscans eat a lot of beans anyway, they're known as the bean eaters. They have this highly traditional and very Tuscan dish, fagioli al fiasco, beans in a flask. And it seems to be a culinary delight that comes from peasant and farming traditions. And it's supposed to be, firstly, farmers, they used to cook their beans with this unique method that saw them place a glass bottle with beans in a corner of the fireplace on a hot ashy embers before going to bed so that they would have freshly cooked beans to wake up in the morning. So I'm not sure if that fiasco comes to represent an exploding glass vessel, perhaps, if you did it wrongly. But certainly the fagioli al fiasco is a delicious traditional Tuscan bean recipe. And there are, I presume, many easier ways to cook it nowadays than placing a glass flask on hot ashes. For this recipe, you need cannellini beans, you need extra virgin olive oil, lots of garlic, some sage, salt and pepper. And obviously, if you make it by tradition, you need a glass jar. So you soak the beans overnight. And these are white beans. Again, they come from the New World. So traditionally, perhaps before the Colombian era, that would have been made with broad beans or chickpeas or something similar anyway, black-eyed peas. So yeah, you soak the beans overnight in cold water. You drain the water from the peas next day. You place them in the vessel with oil, garlic and sage and cover with water. Add salt, pepper to taste. And then you cook it slowly in an oven. And that will vary in time. It can take a few hours. Depends if you had hot ashes or something like that, or if it's in the oven, gas oven and so on. But when it's done, you want to separate the liquid from the beans and put them in different bowls. Wet the beans with a little drizzle of the cooking water and season again if you need, and drizzle with olive oil and a dash of salt on top, and serve as they are with some crusty bread. And this is how supposed to be eaten, this comfort Tuscany food. Thanks for listening. I've been Thomas Dinas, and this was the Delicious Legacy podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, why not become a patron? And from $3 a month, you can get all the episodes ad-free, released early, and of course have access to extra content for Patreon backers only. Alternatively, you can rate us and leave a review and subscribe and follow the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and wherever else you get your podcast from. Thank you. See you again next week with many more archaeogastronomical adventures.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.